The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning and welcome to Nature Nuggets here on Radio Kingston. I'm Chris Baker, filling in for Laurel Sutherland, who's away for his birthday today, or should I say bird day, since almost all his trip photos so far revolve around birds. So we want to wish you a very happy birthday, Laurel, and we're wishing you all the roseate spoonbills of your heart's desire. Radio Kingston's Nature Nugget is Radio Kingston's resident nature show, which Laurel started more than a year ago now to help expand our definition of community radio to embrace our more than human kin. I learn something about the place I live every time I tune into Radio Kingston, and in this hour, we hope to help folks get to know the astounding biodiversity of plants, animals, fungi, and even the microorganisms we're so fortunate to share space with every day here in the Hudson Valley. Filling in for Laurel is always a joy and feels like a very natural extension of the other work that I do. I'm a writer, an outdoor educator, and the founder of Chicory Naturalists, which is a nature-focused book and gift shop at the Kingston waterfront. We're on the same block as Savona's and Rosie General. We carry a curated selection of books and guides for all ages, as well as board games, naturalist gear, toys, journals and sketchbooks, gifts, really anything that can help folks learn about and appreciate nature. There's a reading and play area for neighbors to come in and relax, and we host many community events throughout the year. We really try to have a little something for everyone because, after all, nature is for everyone. And more than ever, these days, our living world needs every one of us to take an interest. In fact, right out the window here at Radio Kingston, we can see people participating in the clean sweep today. So thanks so much to those neighbors. As Laurel says, people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. Okay, so now it's time for Who's About Town, which is a segment like the Society Pages, but for people who consider flowers big deal celebrities. At this point in spring, it's really hard to focus on any one observation since so much is happening all at the same time. For a lot of people right now, the headline news is bird migration, since this is the time a lot of migratory species will be coming back to us for the season, and you can get a glimpse of species which over summer further north while they stop for food breaks here in the Hudson Valley. Unfortunately, I'm too much of a bird novice to have any super cool observations to share from this year's migration. My biggest victory is that I actually managed to see a warbler this week. I mean, I have no idea what kind of warbler it was, but I saw it with my own eyes. And this disproved my long-held theory that warblers are invisible, because while I've heard many warbler, I have literally never seen one. According to birdcast.info, which is a really great website for bird migration data, more than 6,000 birds per kilometer will be passing over our skies tonight, which was I think they said that's high. So to be a friend to these birds, please remember to turn out your outdoor lights tonight and really all for the month of May. This really helps our avian friends get where they need to go, because birds are highly distracting for them as they make their way from, you know, as far as South America all the way up to Northern Canada. But while I can't fill Laurel's shoes in the bird world, I can confidently report on the understory. I took a walk this week along the Cottekill Rail Trail, which is where I spotted the warbler, and the spring ephemeral wildflowers were really popping off. Three-leafed trilliums, little rue anemones, big fancy red columbines, and the oddball jack-in-the-pulpits were all on full display. Ephemerals are basically all the little wildflowers that grow in the understory, and they put up leaves and blooms very early in the spring, since that's their one shot at getting to photosynthesize before the trees have completely leafed out. So if you want to see the little ephemerals, you got to run, don't walk to the forest this weekend, and they'll be there probably for another couple weeks. All right, so today I have a local hero in the studio with me. I'm so excited to have with me Luke Sarantonio. Luke grew up in Rosendale, New York, exploring the local landscape and its unique ecology. He truly discovered fungi while studying at SUNY ESF and immediately fell in love. He has since developed a dynamic career based around this passion for fungi. Luke's work includes educational programming focused on ecological understanding and mushroom cultivation, organizing an annual mushroom and arts festival in the Catskill region, which is for the love of fungi, we'll get into that for sure, facilitating community projects like the Eat More Mushrooms Project, and creating a line of functional mushroom products under the name Mycophilic. He also consults for outdoor mushroom farms and manages his own farm in Akron, New York. Luke's main goal is to be an accessible resource for people who want to learn more about this fascinating group of life, which hopefully includes us here today. So welcome and thanks so much for being here, Luke.
Oh, thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. And thanks for inviting me on the show, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Well, you've been on my list since the beginning, so
it's an honor. I'm
very happy to have you here. And to start off, would you like to share an observation from the forest? I know it's very hard to choose.
Oh my gosh, there's so much going on in the forest right now. But I had two little ones this morning as I was rambling through the forest on a little morning jaunt before I came out here. One of them was some really beautiful small Mycena, probably mushrooms, growing off some logs and just the striation. So these long parallel lines running down the cap were just gorgeous in structure. And then also, the red efts are all over the forest,
especially
this morning after this rain we just had. And I love just seeing them coming out and kind of wandering, ambling through the forest, looking for different snacks and, you know, maybe a party or something like that.
Oh,
I like
they to think definitely of them, have parties around those mushrooms.
Oh, I know. I like to think of them as like kind of the teenager of the...
Yeah.
Of the,
well, they are, right? They're the adolescent
exactly.
form of the... is it the Eastern spotted salamander?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Which I have only ever seen the spotted salamander one time, but the red Fs, you can, well, and they really, you mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. pop out in the forest.
Yeah, so we have the spotted salamander, which is the yellow spotted. Mm-hmm. That's one that people often see, but then the red spotted newt is the one that lives most of its life cycle in the
water. Yeah, they are. The newt, yeah. I've never seen that, for sure. I've never seen a...
They're so cool. Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, I've seen pictures, but yeah, never in person. That's still on my... I saw them one time in a vernal pool, was like... Was that it? Was that a newt? But, you know.
Oh my gosh, there's so much going on in those vernal pools right now. It's kind of getting to the end of that season though, huh?
Yeah, I know. I got to make it back before the end. So I know that you really fell down the fungi rabbit hole at ESF, and also just quick shout out to SUNY ESF because I think you're maybe the third ESF. Well, I mean, sure, more than that. Many of our guests are grads of that amazing program.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But I'm curious, because you grew up in the same woods that you frequent now, if you have sort of some beginning memories of encountering mushrooms while you were growing up in Rosendale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. You know, I was really fortunate to have parents that supported me going out in the forest and exploring. And unfortunately, they didn't really have too much to teach me about fungi. And so most of what it was observation. And I've always really been into like the structures, you know, all these different structures that are formed within nature and all the different organisms that create these amazing, beautiful structures. And so a lot of it early on with fungi was just observing and wondering, you know, and there really wasn't that much in terms of education out there for me at that time, or I didn't feel that there was. And so again,
definitely
it was like this, like wondering and seeing like cup fungi, for instance, those amazing structures, and club fungi and cordyceps types of things, and just wondering. And, you know, then later on, I started to learn a little bit more. But
oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I don't I feel like a lot of people have the experience of not even seeing them before they have a place to put them in their mind in some ways, or one precedes the other. So it's interesting to have that like very living curiosity, and then you go to ESF and it's like, oh.
yeah. And I was studying aquatics and fisheries when I went into school and didn't even really know much about fungi yet.
You were just studying fisheries?
Yeah, I was studying aquatics and fisheries. That was the major that I went into, because I was very much into aquatic ecosystems, and I had worked with Clearwater, as I think we talked before. And so, yeah, that was what I went into school to study. And then I took a general ecology course, and the professor was a mycorrhizal ecologist. So mycorrhizae is this big word, basically just talks about this grouping of fungi connected with different plants underground. You know, we always hear this, like, everything's connected. You know, we always say, everything's connected. And it's like, we think about it all the time. But, you know, it's sometimes it almost like becomes a joke for people, like saying that everything's connected. And, you know, and then it really like came to a head when I learned about mycorrhizae and realizing, so 90% of land plants rely on fungi underground for this amazing relationship of nutrients and water in exchange for the sugars that they're photosynthesizing the plants. And, you know, it's, I had heard about mycorrhizae and that there was this connection, but I didn't realize it was so vast. And it just blew my mind. I was like, I need to switch my major completely. And so I did do that. But
that's awesome. And also really amazing fortune to have. I feel like there's one of the unfortunate things is that there's actually not a lot of mycorrhizal ecologists that in any university. I mean, I guess being at ESF, I guess your odds are better. But yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I was fortunate. There were a few professors that I worked under that were just really inspiring within mycology. And yeah, fortunate to be where I was at when I discovered fungi.
Did it change the way, like after you came back from college or when you would come back on breaks, like, and you were moving through the same woods, do you remember how it sort of changed the way that you encountered those same species?
Oh, of course. I mean, the excitement was just like unending, and just understanding them just a little bit more. And it's, you know, within life, we're constantly trying, striving for understanding and constantly learning, you know, but I think just learning a little bit and understanding a little bit more about these connections and their relationships within the forest just became so fascinating for me, and all these little things that would jump out. And then, you know, also just through observation and looking for certain structures, your eyes just tune in over time and things just pop out at you. It's just truly amazing to get back into some of the ecosystems that, you know, things that I never realized maybe were even there all of a sudden are popping out at me. And
yeah, the little mycena mushrooms you were mentioning before, like those are ones that you could so easily overlook if you're not tuned into fungi.
I would have totally just walked by
those.
Small
brown, basically same color as the wood they're decaying, you know.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got your eyes now. Did you have a spark mushroom? Like some people have a spark bird. Or if not, like what was the thing that really kind of...
For sure,
I mean, you've mentioned structures.
Yeah, a lot of it was really structures, but also learning about mycorrhizae. I didn't really have a specific spark mushroom, but a lot of it was like the boletes and the amanitas, those mycorrhizal mushrooms that I saw throughout the landscape, but didn't really understand what their function might have been within these ecosystems, and realizing that they are forming these underground connections and that you can find them around certain trees if you like understand a little bit of what trees they might associate with or what they might like. You know,
and those
you can look
are
for
some
those trees.
Also some pretty like charismatic big fruiting bodies.
So exactly. I mean, you have the Amanita muscaria, which is in so much folklore, and so I would see that in so much different things growing up, so many different things growing up, and then seeing it in the forest and in the landscape and wondering, you know, what kind of relationships it forms.
And for, I feel like a lot of people are familiar with, yeah, the Amanitas because of the Amanita muscaria. But for those who don't know what the boletes are, can you give a little description?
Yeah.
Visual?
For sure. So boletes, they do have a stem and a cap like you might think of as a typical mushroom shape. But instead of having like gills, like you might think of as like a button mushroom or something like that, that has these radiating lines from the center stalk, they have more of like a spongy surface or tubes. They're still kind of fleshy and squishy in a lot of cases, but a good example of them would be porcini. A lot of people really love the porcini.
Lissep.
Yeah, the king of the boletes, they say. And there are some species in this. We actually get the true Boletus edulis right in this area, but also, you know, the separans, right? Boletus separans, wonderful.
Is that the lilacs?
Grouping. Yeah, the lilac bolete. Yeah.
So tasty.
Indeed.
So I want to talk about like the many projects that you're involved in, because you have so much on your plate.
We try to do a lot.
But I'm curious, like, especially knowing that you started from aquatic life, I'm curious about how you got to where you are, and specifically because you're a little unique in the mushroom world for your focus on cultivation. Not unique, but I think it's just because somebody is passionate about mushrooms doesn't mean they have any idea how to cultivate them, speaking for myself.
For sure. No, that's a really good point. And actually, in college, we had professors that were mycologists, and they were amazing taxonomists and mycorrhizal ecologists. But we actually did a little experiment with cultivating oyster mushrooms on coffee grounds in one of the classes. And the professor had no idea about cultivation. It was really interesting.
And it can go bad so fast.
It can. And we started getting these formations. We saw what we call, some people call, an octopus formation with oysters. Have you ever seen that?
Is it like when when they're not quite going right, like when it's like off to the sides.
They grow off to the sides. Yeah. They grow in these long tentacle-like arms, and they don't really form full caps. And it's typically a response. There could be multiple things, but it's most likely a response to airflow. Mm. And it was funny. The professor didn't even realize that at first. He was like, I don't even know what's going on, which is just so interesting. And then I, you know, got out of school, and I really didn't know very much about cultivation of mushrooms. But I was offered an internship in the Finger Lakes. I was working for Hawk Meadow Farm.
Oh, cool.
Shout out to Hawk Meadow Farm in the Finger Lakes. And I was getting out of school, and I had to pay college loans, and I was looking for a job in the field. And one of my friends was working, managing the farmer's market in Ithaca. And he had a friend who had previously managed the market there, and who had had a shiitake farm and a few other mushrooms that they were cultivating all outdoors, which was totally new to me. But seemed so intuitive and made so much sense, you know, just like everything's decomposing in the forest, right? And if you can maybe encourage a certain mushroom that you want to, you know, pick or eat or something like that, and then, you know, you can have it growing right there in your backyard in a forest setting.
I mean, that's, yeah, you're making it sound super easy and intuitive.
You know, I didn't realize how easy it was. And that's one of the big things that I hear from people when I do workshops, and I host different workshops on cultivation in this way, on logs. One of the biggest things that I hear from people, and it really, it cements it so much for me, is people say, I didn't realize how easy this was, is the biggest thing. And it really is. It can be so easy to do. All you need is a little bit of shade, honestly, and you can create that shade if you need it. And you can grow mushrooms on logs.
So I think because, like, I think one of the really cool things about learning about cultivation of anything, right, either whether it's fungi or plants or probably also people who raise chickens or something, I'm not sure, but I feel like it really gives you a deeper sense of the life cycle of the organism. And then, like, from that, a lot of information kind of flows more naturally, understanding, like, how how an organism grows. And because, as we mentioned at the top, like, mycological studies is, like, not part of most people's education growing up. Could you give the listeners a little bit of context for the fungi life cycle and sort of walk us through what goes into growing edible mushrooms?
Of course. It can get a little dense and a little bit complicated.
Sure, yeah,
but
an overview.
Just really briefly, so a fungal spore, which comes out of a mushroom, is almost like a seed. But a seed has all the genetics that it needs in order to create a whole new individual. So the sex happened basically in the flower, and both the strands of DNA, like the chromosome strands, are basically both there. Whereas within fungi, the spore is almost like a sperm in an egg. It has half of the genetics needed, and two spores have to actually meet each other. They have to land near each other and shoot out that first phase of a filamentous root-like structure that we call hyphae, that later can be called mycelium when it's really, really forming together. But this first root phase called hyphae has to meet another of the same species. And then at that point, they have all the genetics that they need. But they don't actually fuse together like most organisms do. And so with humans and with mammals and things like that, the two forms of DNA are fused together, these two strands, basically. But with fungi, they actually, instead of fusing together at that point when they meet, they actually share their DNA, which is in the nucleus of each cell, and they actually jump over, their nuclei jump over. And so if you were to take a microscope, you could tell by looking at an individual cell if it has made it yet, and if it's ready to form a mushroom. Before that, it only has half of the genetics, like we said. And so you can look at a cell with a microscope, and if it has two little nuclei floating next to each other, you know that it's mated, and then at that point, it can start producing a mushroom. And so what people often do is they'll take something that they know is already mated. Sometimes we'll take something from out of the environment that we find in the forest. And we know that if it's a mushroom that we see, it's clearly already mated because it's producing mushrooms. And we can actually take, in some cases, we can take just a small cutting like you would with a plant. You know, a lot of people are familiar with taking a plant cutting and rooting it out. You can do that with fungi as well. You can do it easily on cardboard in a low-tech way. Or you can get a little bit more high-tech and do it in a lab situation. Because fungi, like a lot of organisms, when they're at their base level, they tend to be pretty sensitive to competition and things like that. They're a single-celled organism. So when you put them in a small amount onto maybe a food source, there may be a lot of other things that can compete. And so that's something that kind of you want to think about a little bit. Sometimes at that level, it makes a little bit more sense to have a lab kind of setup. So for that reason, sometimes people jump over that and they get the material from somebody that has a lab. And they get this material that's already in mass, often in sawdust. In our case, we get what we call sawdust spawn, which is the fungus has grown through, the hyphae has mated, and they've taken that hyphae and introduced it into sawdust, and it's grown out into this mass we call mycelium when all these strands of hyphae are mixed together and are growing together. And then we take that sawdust and we drill holes in a log. This is the outdoor cultivation on log tech that we tend to use the most. We drill holes all around the log, and then we have this little tool that's just a brass pipe that we stick into our spawn, and it grabs just a little cartridge of sawdust, and it has a spring-loaded end, so we're able to put it up to the log where a hole is and tap that end, and it shoots that little cartridge of sawdust into the log, and then we wax every single hole. And so it's a good amount of work. We have to also harvest the logs from the forest, so that's a lot of work as well. But when it comes down to the investment, it's totally worth it. And the amount of mushrooms that you get over time, you can get 3 or 5 years or more off of a single log.
That's incredible. I mean, I think thinking about how different, just how different the reproduction of fungi is than what we are even used to thinking about, even from plants, which is pretty different than animals even. It's fascinating, and I've never done it myself, but seeing the fact that you can like just take a sample of a mushroom and then be like, now you become mycelium.
Yeah. And they're so adaptable too. So like they'll adapt to the area that they're in. And if you can grab them and then grow them in that same area.
Yeah. Well, and I want to get into sort of the wisdom of growing natively adapted species as well after the break, but we need to take just a little break for words from the community, and we'll be back just in just a few minutes with Luke Sarantonio.
Great.
Hi, I'm Phil from the City of Kingston Parks and Recreation Department. With the changing seasons, we're happy to say that Parks and Rec is offering even more programs and activities for our community. There's something for all ages, abilities, and interests. For the sports lover, we're offering programs like beach volleyball, basketball, and softball. If getting out and about is more your speed, we will be leading kayak paddles on the Hudson and community bike rides this spring and summer. And during the dog days of summer, when all you want is to take it easy, come out and join us for a movie in the park. We have free drop-in after-school programs at the Hodge and Rondout Community Centers for all school-aged children. And we have kids programs for spring and summer breaks, too. To register for programs, rent facilities, or get more information, visit us at kingston.recdesk.com. That's kingston.recdesk.com.
What actually is time?
The news is discouraging.
Right now, things aren't going too good.
The first order of business is to self-regulate.
We might be having problems there.
Take a breath. That does not mean tune out. That does not mean get apathetic.
What actually is time?
Bird Time, during the Heavy Light Show, weekdays at 3:30.
15 minutes of mindfulness in community with Micah, Teresa, and special guests.
We are about to lock in and focus.
Bird Time, during the Heavy Light Show with Ida, weekdays at 3:30, here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9.
Skate Time is hosting Love on Wheels, an evening for LGBTQ plus teens on Friday, May 9th. LGBTQIA plus youth and allies between the ages of 13 and 19 are invited to skate, listen to music, play games in the arcade, watch some drag and storytelling performances, make arts and crafts, and enjoy free food. There will also be local organizations on site offering resources and a way to stay connected. Attendees under the age of 18 need to be signed by a driver who is 18 or older. Parents, guardians, and caretakers are invited to a mixer at Harana Market across the street, where they can connect with the four organizations hosting the event: TMI Project, New Paltz Pride Coalition, Hudson Valley LGBTQ Community Center, and the Future Perfect Project. Love on Wheels, Friday, May 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Skate Time, which is at 5164 U.S. Highway 209 in Akron. To RSVP and for more information, email contact@thefutureperfectproject.org. All right. So welcome back to Nature Nuggets here on Radio Kingston. I'm Chris Baker filling in for Laurel Sutherland today, and I'm here with Luke Sarantonio, who is one of our guides to the realm of fungi here in the Hudson Valley and the creator of Mycophilic, as well as the organizer of many other projects, which we're about to get into.
Take on a lot.
Yes. So something that I definitely want to make sure we talk about, because I think it's going to be so interesting to people here in Kingston, is the Eat More Mushrooms project that you launched 2 years ago. Could you please tell us a little about the inspiration for this project and how you got started?
For sure. So I grew up in Rosendale, and I grew up on 2/3 of an acre, no real forest, small backyard. And I always, you know, wanted to do community projects and tried to figure out different ways that I could, you know, give back to my local community, and never really felt like I had the means, the space, the financial ability to do so. But I've always kind of been wanting to in some way. Then just learning about mushroom cultivation and realizing how accessible it can be to people and how few people really have the resources or even just educational resources available to them locally. That was a really big part of it for me. And then also I met my partner, and she was living on some beautiful forested land that is heavily in need of management. And so we've been working on our own little mushroom operation over there, and realizing that the forests are so much in need of forest management that we are able to make small gaps for things to regrow and encourage certain species of trees and make the forests, you know, in our way. I grew up kind of like with the mentality of we need to have hands off. We've done too much, you know, and we need to just step back. And then I realized really how much we had done, and we had done so much that maybe there are some things that we can do to help out the forest, and realizing that we've created situations where the forests are way too dense, and we've knocked out top predators, you know, and created a lot of situations where we can actually do things to help. And so
this is like a perfect time. 2 weeks ago, Laurel had on Ethan Tapper, who wrote How to Love a Forest. And this was, so also if people are interested in this topic, there's a good tie-in episode.
To go back and listen to that. That sounds wonderful.
But yeah, I think it's a misconception that people have, that hands-off is going to repair what's been done, because
I always had that perspective. I really did. And I was like, we need to not, I was against hunting. I was completely against deer hunting. You know, I've changed my perspective a little bit over the years. And so through that, realizing that there's so much fuel in the forest and so much potential substrate for mushroom cultivation in the forest as well, I just was like, wait a second, maybe we can, you know, give back to the local community and, you know, focus on areas where people might not have access to the wood to grow mushrooms, or might not necessarily have good access to fresh food in general. That was a really big kind of focus for us, was to show people that you can grow mushrooms in this way very simply. And we've been working with Kingston Land Trust a little bit, and working with YMCA Farm Project now. And
really? You're working with the farm
project? Yeah. Oh, we just had a workshop with them, with their youth group. What an amazing group of young individuals. Oh my gosh. I was just working with them. I was so inspired. I was like, oh my gosh.
It's a really incredible project.
It is. And it really gives me hope for the future, honestly. And we've been working with them and Kingston Land Trust. And we worked, last year we helped to set up a small log garden, basically a small mushroom garden in Red Fox Ravine. And you can go and check that out anytime you like on Wilbur Ave.
Yeah, I think that maybe a lot of people haven't discovered Red Fox Ravine, but it's our most recent addition to parks in Kingston.
Oh my gosh, it is such a gem. It is an amazing spot.
Can you tell people a little bit about, I mean, this, where it's situated?
Of course. So it's down on the bottom of Wilbur Ave, down near the Ronda, near the waterfront there, and just kind of right below, before you bottom out at the bottom of the hill there. And it's this beautiful ravine that was pretty heavily poorly managed in the past, but there are some really beautiful trees up and around the edge of this rim, and you can walk up and into the ravine and this beautiful rock cliffs all around you. And we have small two stacks of logs there that you can come up and learn about, and there's signage there, and you can learn about our project. And then also when the mushrooms are fruiting, they're totally open for people to pick. Obviously, you always want to be safe. With shiitake, they're very distinct, and especially within the first 3 years, you're not really going to see other mushroom-looking mushrooms growing on these types of logs. So it is more in the safe realm, but you always want to know what you're picking and eating.
Yeah, they're free and available to the community. I mean, what a...
Really, yeah, really. Part of it was to, as an educational space for people to meet and... have these kinds of discussions about food security and how they can work together to maybe expand on this project. Part of it is, you know, our hopes is that people will be very interested, and maybe a few people in the local community might spearhead it a little bit more, and to where we could just kind of step back and be on the consulting kind of side of things and point people in the right direction if they need a little guidance, but really something that people in the local community can feed themselves.
Keep someone to fish, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's, you know, a really big hope of ours, and we're expanding that. And if you're curious about the project and you want to help us out in some way or donate, you can go on our website. Or if you know of a space,
that website.
Yeah, so our website is mycophilic.net, mycophilic. And that's my business name. Myco is the base for fungi, and philic is like an affinity for or a love for. We love fungi. Honestly, I think all of our bodies have are mycophilic in general, and maybe we just need to get a little bit back to that and understand that a little bit more.
That was going to be my other question, because I know you are such an advocate for eating mushrooms, and, you know, as somebody who is now absolutely devoted to mushrooms and grew up thinking they were the grossest food
you
in
too.
The world. Yes. Oh, gosh, is that your story? Too. Oh, my God.
Yep, that's my story.
I didn't voluntarily eat a mushroom until I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. You know, I thought I hated mushrooms completely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even as a child, I think that may have even turned me off. The texture of them might have even turned me off of even being interested at first. And then as I got a little older, I started realizing that there are so many textures in the mushroom world. And also, maybe I just wasn't cooking it quite long enough, or maybe I was leaving too much moisture in. That was
maybe
a really big problem.
Maybe you were eating raw mushrooms out of the Ruby Tuesday salad bar.
Maybe I was doing that. Which really isn't very digestible, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, that's another big part of Eat More Mushrooms, not just setting up and helping to develop these log gardens, but also creating recipe pages and little YouTube videos that we're going to be launching soon, just ways that people can cook mushrooms in a different way that they may have not thought about. Maybe they thought they didn't like mushrooms, and if you cook them in this certain way, they might be nice and crispy instead of slimy. And for me, that was a really big thing, was like cooking them and thinking that, oh no, I cooked it too long, and then tasting it and realizing, oh my gosh.
This is much better.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and mushrooms hold a lot of moisture. And so in a lot of cases, if you can get that moisture out through like a simmer or a dry saute first, meaning not using any oil or anything, and then throw some oil in, you can really end up with a lot better texture and overall just delightful.
And from the sort of both human health and planetary health perspective, can you give people a little context of why they might, if they're either middling or on the fence about eating mushrooms, why you're such an advocate for eating
them?
Oh,
for sure. So mushrooms are extremely nutritious. They're high in many different trace minerals, vitamins B, vitamin D, vitamin C, protein levels. They're a great source. They're also a source of dietary fiber. Really great in that realm. But ecologically as well, they're extremely important. There are decomposers in these ecosystems. They're also shuttling these nutrients around to the different organisms in our ecosystems. And they're really important in that way. But they're also, and a lot of people, I mean, I'm hearing this more and more, but they are amazing at sequestering carbon. And if you can encourage more fungi in your landscape, you're literally sequestering more carbon. And so a good example of this, or a good way that you could do this, is you could introduce fungi into your garden and into your mulch piles. For instance, there are a lot of fungi like wine caps that'll decompose your mulch really fast into a soil they'll fruit edible mushrooms, and they are also sequestering large amounts of carbon. And if you can have a fungi forward decomposition or composting situation, you're going to be overall sequestering a lot more carbon, significantly more carbon.
Yeah, which I think as far as forestry practices go, especially, it was like not nearly appreciated enough until pretty recently, right? The goal of just planting trees, but ignoring the role of fungi and carbon.
Right. Yeah. So the trees are pulling in the carbon, the CO2, right? And they're transporting and exchanging it with the fungi. And the fungi hold on to it and they form these amazing masses. I mean, as many of you may have read or seen, like in some cases, they can have 8 miles of fungal cells in a single cubic inch of soil. Which is kind of crazy if you think about it. Yeah. So there's a lot of carbon under the ground. And if we can encourage the fungal connections, it's like, it's a win-win.
It's a virtuous cycle. Like, they help each other.
Indeed.
So that's inspirational. And so knowing that with the Eat More Mushrooms project that you have the log set up and sort of cycling through fruitings of shiitakes at Red Fox Ravine, and you have done a workshop with the Farm Project. Do you have other Kingston sort or closely focused workshops coming up or projects this year?
That's a good question. So in terms of inoculation for the season, we're kind of coming a little bit to the end of inoculation season.
Is this because you want to do it in the beginning of the year?
Yeah, so you tend to want to, the best time to do it is harvesting logs in the cold season. Mm. And then as things warm up, you want to introduce the fungus so that other competitive fungi might not come in too much and compete. And then also dryness is a factor. And so the logs are slowly drying out and you want to get your ideal targeted fungus that you're trying to grow in as soon as possible before the logs dry out too much. And then there's less food in a log that's cut in the growing season. You can still do that. And we will be doing a little bit of that this year, just because maybe you need to cut something for one reason or another, or it falls down or something in the growing season. But there's just a little bit less food than what's stored in the dormant season when there's no leaves on the trees. They pull a lot of that nutrients in
and
hold it.
That makes so much sense, yeah.
Typically, this is kind of getting to the end of our inoculation season, but we're planning some stuff for the fall, so look out for that. We'll be doing some inoculations coming up with that. And you can always reach out to us if you're curious or you want to maybe consult us. Like I said, you can inoculate mushrooms all throughout the growing season, but typically spring and fall tend to be kind of the best times.
Awesome. And as you look sort of forward to the future of that project, what are your aspirations?
Man, so many things. So a big part of it actually is, and something that I'm really working on looking forward to that we've talked about briefly in the past is culturing local strains of fungi and using those within our projects. That's really the major goal going forward, is to find a mushroom in an area, and you know, oysters are really good candidates in this case. Find a mushroom and do what we call cloning, or taking a tissue culture, like I mentioned earlier, and then growing that out into sawdust and then introducing it to logs in the same site, all on the same site, or in the same region. So what I'm hoping is maybe even in that park we might find an oyster species that would be a good candidate. But also I'm planning to host throughout, it's probably going to be starting in the early fall is what I'm thinking, or late summer. I'm planning to host walks in the city of Kingston in different parks in hopes that we can find, you know, there'll be ecology walks and we'll be talking about all the different fungi and different organisms and relationships. But part of the focus will be in hopes of finding a specimen of, you know, maybe an oyster that we could take a tissue culture of and teach people how to do that as well. And because you can do it in a really low tech way, and then be growing something that we're not bringing in from another region. Not only is it adapted to that specific area that it's growing in, but we're not bringing in another species that could potentially cause a problem.
Right.
A species like...
Well, yeah, let's get into the golden oyster question.
A species like golden oyster. So that's an example of something that's just such a vigorous species of fungi that it was able to jump out of cultivation.
It's very likely if you walk in the woods in our area that you've probably seen them before. You may not have known what you were looking at, but they're an incredibly obvious, bright, beautiful, beautiful mushroom. They have gills on the underside. They form in clusters, and they're like a golden, like sunshine yellow. And because they have now sort of tipped over into the invasive territory, they are growing in larger and larger numbers. So if you haven't seen them yet, you almost certainly will in the future. And they're a good one to learn how to identify, because if you only can identify one wild edible mushroom, you're going to see more of those. But that's what was really fascinating to me, Luke, when you said that you were trying to grow or trying to like propagate a regionally adapted species. Some months ago, I had on Sephra Alexandra, who in the plant world does like a regional ecotype project with seed saving. And I feel like this is a very synergistic project in the realm of fungi. Can you talk a little about like what the value of a regionally adapted species
is? For sure. I mean, there are a lot of different things within a regionally adapted species, but the different organisms that live alongside it understand how to eat it a little bit more. Maybe they understand and recognize it as a food a little bit more. And just an overall relationship in the ecosystem. All these different organisms have relationships with each other. And when something brand new comes in, you know, sometimes it's not recognized as food, and sometimes that's one of the things that enables it, and one of the factors that enables it to really jump off and compete in the ecosystem. But golden oysters are really unique. They are one of the most vigorous species of oyster in general.
Oyster mushrooms of fungi are incredibly
the most, vigorous, like, generalists, fruiting edible mushrooms that you can possibly find. And so they really have been able to jump off, and it's hard to really know with fungi what effect they might actually be having on the ecosystem, because it's harder to know, like, versus with plants. You can walk through the forest, for instance, and say, oh, that's that plant. And, you know, the plant isn't always there for the whole growing season, but a lot of times you can see it throughout the growing season. You can say it's there, you know. And with mushrooms or fungi, when you see the mushroom, you can say, oh, that's mushroom, that's that mushroom, and that's there. But sometimes they're only there for a day or two, and so it can be really difficult to know exactly really what's going on.
And sometimes they don't fruit ever or for years at a time.
And so a lot of it is like observing and taking photos of things and documenting, and through that observation, understanding a little bit and more of that, but realizing that these are fruiting in mass abundance and likely competing for food. I mean, in the forest, I'm seeing a lot less of the native endemic oyster mushroom.
Yeah, past like 4 years especially, I feel like I like almost never see it.
I know, and it's a shame. You know, not only is it a big part of the ecosystem, but it's a delicious mushroom. I find that there's the two major species of the endemic oyster, the lung and the ostrich, are they called? The ostriatus, think. I guess that's the name for that originally, or the pearl oyster. The lung oyster, I really love the scent of. It has this like anise kind of beautiful, wonderful, delightful scent. And I haven't been seeing it that much, and it saddens me. So I'm hoping that maybe we can propagate something like that and bring it a little bit more abundant in the ecosystem. Because if we're cultivating it, it's releasing large amounts of spores and potentially repopulating some areas, or maybe being able to compete a little bit more with.
Yeah. Maybe bringing in some fruiting bodies when the trees come down. And so I'm so excited about that part of your work. And I know that this is, we did cover that, but I do also want to talk about, something a little bit, adjacent from this, because it's about the connection of people and fungi. You organize every year the For the Love of Fungi Festival, which I've been so happy to be a part of these past years. And, I know that organizing a festival is just a ton of work.
Say that again.
Yeah. And no matter what the scale is, it's always a huge undertaking. And it's been just such a wonderful addition to the Hudson Valley. So I would love to hear sort of like what the the driving force to make sure that's part of the work that you do in the year?
That's a good question.
Connecting people
about that. It is a very, very large part of what we do. But actually this year, we have decided that we have so many projects that we want to focus on that the annual festival, that's the large festival we do, is actually on a hiatus for this year.
Oh, okay.
We're focusing. I'm sorry, Chris.
No.
No, honestly, it has been so amazing and the feedback has been overwhelming. But when it comes down to it, as of right now and with what's going on in the world, we really feel that communities, small community projects where we really feel that we can reach people on a community personal level and a little bit better and a little bit more efficient is really what's important to us right now.
Mm.
And we're definitely not ending For the Love of Fungi annual festival. It's just this year is a hiatus and we'll be coming back with even more and more exciting things this next coming year. And we'll be announcing that soon.
Okay.
But yeah, a big part of it for us was, or for me, was going to other large mushroom events regionally and nationally, and the community is just so overwhelmingly supportive. It blows my mind, honestly, just going to these events and just seeing how supportive everybody is and how excited everybody is and how, you know, I think a lot of people that are fascinated by fungi for so long, they tell people or they talk to somebody about fungi and they either get weird looks or the person that they're talking to only wants to talk about psychedelics for hours, which is okay. And I get that. You know, I don't discount the therapeutic value of psychedelics, but I think that
when people that's who not are, your main interest.
Right. And yes. I think people who are interested in fungi, when they find other people who are interested, who aren't just going to look at them weird, there's just amazing, like, just willingness to share and excitement to share their experiences. And, you know, people that are at the top of the field that, you know, when you meet them, you're like, awe-inspiring, you know, and they're so open to sharing and personable and excited because they've experienced this, that they want to tell somebody and they're so excited about this thing within fungi and they just get weird looks. And when they don't get weird looks, it's just so amazing for them. And
yeah.
I think that's really been a big part. And that's some driving force for us to organize this festival and bring people together and show people that there are cool people doing cool things within fungi, like yourself and like other people locally and regionally. And, you know, these people need to be showcased and shown that they are resources for people that want to learn more.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I know for myself, like, I was sort of already a little bit down the rabbit hole. But then I went to a Radical Mycology Convergence was the first mushroom festival that I went to, or like mm-hmm. sort of gathering that I went to. And just the density of learning that you can do in a weekend is
amazing.
Kind of special.
It really is.
Yeah. You come away more radicalized.
Yeah. And seeing people's passion and how excited they are about all this is just contagious.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I think in the, yeah, as you say, there's more than one way to tap into that energy and with everything that's,
most definitely.
Yeah,
most definitely.
I totally understand the refocusing on more local intimate connections.
Oh, for sure.
Too,
for sure. And if you're interested in the annual festival, reach out to us if you want to get involved. We are always looking for more people to get involved with that.
Absolutely. And so we will talk a little bit more about the rest of your work after these a little break for community words.
Hi, I'm Susan Copenhaver from the Ulster County Office for Aging. We're currently working on recruiting volunteer drivers and schedulers for our Neighbor to Neighbor program, which offers people in need rides to medical appointments. Drivers are reimbursed for mileage and can choose when and where they wish to drive. Schedulers work to create rides for people who need them. If you're 60 years or older, Lyft and Uber drivers in local areas can also take you to medical appointments, shopping, and pharmacies through our GoGo program. The Ulster County Office for Aging also assists older adults to register for the UCAT shopping bus and paratransit van, another way for older adults to get to medical appointments in our area. All of these programs are free to riders. If you're in need of these services or you wish to volunteer, or if you're a Lyft or Uber driver who'd like to participate, please call our office at 845-340-3456 or visit our website at ulstercountyny.gov/aging.
Greetings, blessings, and salutations, and I'm inviting you to the Miss V Show, the musical journey for your soul on Saturday nights from 8 to 10 p.m.
Show me love.
You are love, you are loving, and you are lovable. Take a break for love.
Now that I am love.
Now that I am love. Love is you.
Saturday Night Love on Radio Kingston, 1490 AM, 107.9 FM, and anytime on radiokingston.org.
Well, welcome back to Nature Nuggets here on Radio Kingston. I'm Chris Baker, and I'm filling in for Laurel Sutherland. And today, my guest has been Luke Sarantonio of Mycophilic, who's been regaling us with tales of mushroom education and festivals and this really amazing project called Eat More Mushrooms. As if there wasn't enough going on, I know that you also recently, as we were just talking a little off mic, took on the co-president role at the Mid-Hudson Mycological Association, which is exciting. And I know that it is always with volunteer organizations, that is a work in progress mm-hmm. to keep things going. But I think it's really great that there's new leadership. And for listeners who are Myco curious, mm-hmm. Could you give a little more information about what the organization offers?
Of course. So we are a mycological association. And just by joining the club, $15 a year, you can have access to all of our walks that we lead. We also do a speaker series in the winter that is actually, the past few years, has been mostly on Zoom. But we are planning to bring more and more of that back into person because meeting in person is so wonderful. We just had our annual potluck that happens every year where we all come together and have different mushroom dishes we eat together. And then also, this year, we're doing a lot of different things for our members. We have a budget that's built up a little bit. And so we have the ability and finances to be able to do things more for our members, especially this year. And so one of those things is a t-shirt contest that our friend Thistle won the t-shirt contest recently. Yeah. And so we just had that printed out recently. And anybody who's a part of the club gets a t-shirt and is entitled to a t-shirt if they want one. And even if you join this year. And so we'll be doing another run of printing t-shirts later in the year for anybody that joins or anybody that didn't get one already. But they're a really beautiful design. Definitely check it out if you haven't yet. We also are doing some first aid training this year that we're offering free to anybody in the club. Just a simple, it's not going to be a certification necessarily initially, but it'll be just a simple first aid training, what to do in certain situations. And then we're also compiling, one of our club members is a paramedic, and he actually is compiling these first aid kits for us so that we can take them out on walks just, you know, to be prepared, to be a little bit more prepared. You know, things don't often happen in the forest when we're hiking, but sometimes they do. And it's, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where you're like, oh, shoot. Right? You don't want to be in an oh shoot moment, especially when you're in the forest with a bunch of other people looking for mushrooms. And so that's some of the things that we're doing for the club. And we're excited to have you. Please come get involved. We need more people to lead walks. And you don't need to feel knowledgeable within fungi to lead a walk. Just maybe know a spot that you want to lead a walk at, or just be interested in general.
Because I actually was trying to find this information before, and I was actually having a little trouble finding it online. So mm-hmm. how are people
for signing
joining?
Up? Yes. That's a good question. As of right now, our signups are, sheet is on Facebook through our Facebook group. But you can also, if you email me, I'm happy to share. I can send you the form, and you can print it out and send it in with your $15 and join through that way. That's an easy way to do it. There's also, I believe, an online form survey style that you can fill out to join the club as well. But if you have any trouble, you can reach out to me. Right now, we are in the process of finally getting our website back up. One of our club members stepped up and is helping us out with that.
Awesome.
And she's amazing. So very excited for that. So in the coming months, we will have a website and everything will be up on there soon. But as of right now, Facebook, Mid-Hudson Mycological, if you search that, or if you reach out to me directly, I'm happy to.
And what's your email?
If you don't email is lsarantonio, S-A-R-R-A-N-T-O-N-I-O, at gmail.com.
And I'll make sure to put this, well, when we put it online, you can share this episode, and you can also find that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, I just think that's really exciting because I feel like sometimes people try to reinvent the wheel with the making community within clubs, and you're like, oh, the Mycological Association is a good it's a good resource to have.
For sure, for sure. There are a lot of really great, knowledgeable people, and also so many people looking to learn, and you know, we're all constantly learning.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most beautiful things, actually, when you were talking about people who are high in the field, like being willing to share so much. I think that's really been my experience too, is there's a real, because I think I always feel a little bit bad saying this, but compared to say birds, which like if you join the John Burroughs Natural History Society, which I highly recommend that everybody do as well, but you get, you know, in the mail this awesome pamphlet with all these naturalist resources, including a fold-out guide of all of the birds you might ever see in New York State.
Nice.
It is on a piece of legal paper.
Wow.
And it's like, compared to that, it with fungi, it's like you will never know all of the mushrooms that live potentially even in your backyard, much less like in the entire region.
Yeah, and but that's the exciting thing, right? That's part of it.
Yeah, and but I think it just kind of, I think it puts a sort of really beautiful humility at the base of this passion, because even, in fact, I find especially people who are like elders who have committed a huge amount of their life to learning about mushrooms are still, you know, will be like, hey, what do you think this is?
For sure.
Just so beautiful.
For sure.
And so now we are like really just at the cusp of the beginning of mushroom season here. And as we've been talking about mushrooms the whole time, I'm curious, what are you on the lookout for out in the woods?
Ah, yes. Let's see. Well, I really love scents. I love smells. One of the mushrooms, and one of the mushrooms that you actually mentioned this morning as we were coming into this office or into the studio here, dryad saddle, Cirriporus squamosus. They also call the pheasant back mushroom. It's a really delightfully smelling spring edible. It's also a really interesting mushroom, but it has kind of like a watermelon-y cucumber, kind of smell to it.
Not mushroom.
Not really mushroom. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of really delightful fungi in the mushroom world that have these smells that you just wouldn't even think of as mushroom.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things I often look for this time of year. Obviously, morels are coming out right now. But all these little tiny micro fungi really fascinate me, especially the small cups. There are some really beautiful bright orange cups that come out this time of year. Just gorgeous, gorgeous structures. Microfungi can, you know, if you just stop and look around, sometimes you'll realize you walked right by all these tiny, micro, beautiful things.
That is the really beautiful thing of like, if you think that you're in the woods and you're not seeing any mushrooms, if you just get low enough.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm always telling people. Just slow down, get low, sit down for a second if you can.
Like, take a deep breath.
Yep.
Yeah. So as we're wrapping up our hour, I would love to just reiterate some of the ways that people can keep abreast of your work and your many offerings. Do you have a newsletter?
We do have a newsletter. If you go on our website, you can sign up for that. You can reach out to me directly. I'll be sending out the next edition soon. But typically, I send it out with just a little info on our upcoming events, which you can also find on our website right now.
Oh, yeah, I know you have a newsletter. I'm on your newsletter.
Oh, yeah. And then I also send out some photos and a little bit of info of what I'm finding in the forest, a little forest report, so you have an idea of what to look for as you walk through the forest. But definitely check out our farm. Big shout out to my partner, Kaya. Eat Flowers Farm is the name of our farm. Come out and check out our mushroom operation.
Eat mushrooms and eat flowers.
Eat mushrooms, eat flowers.
It's imperative. And what's that website again? Because I think we gave up in an earlier part of the show.
Yeah, it's mycophilic. And all of our projects are on that. mycophilic.net.
Awesome. Well, I am so grateful for your time today, Luke. Been a long time coming, and we'll have to have you back when there's more updates about eat more mushrooms and maybe for the biennial for the Love of Fungi Festival.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
So I want to shout out just at the end here a few events we have coming up. We've got a Spring Abundance Foraging Walk that I'm doing on Saturday, May 18th from 11 to 1 p.m. You can find about that at chicorynaturalist.com. And the John Burroughs Natural History Society is going to be leading a bunch of wonderful spring migration walks, which you can find about on their website or Facebook. The next one will be on Thursday, May 8th. Thanks so much for listening to Nature Nuggets today on Radio Kingston. Laurel will be back again next week, and make sure to wish him a happy birthday if you see him. Please feel free to email us with suggestions or questions by contacting naturenuggets@radiokingston.org. And you can also follow Nature Nuggets Instagram at HV Nature Nuggets. Thanks so much.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or